Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about Gitcoin, a way to fund and be funded on your open source projects. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett, episode 474, recorded on March 7th, 2018. Gitcoin. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. And by IT Pro TV, binge-worthy learning for IT pros. Visit itpro.tv/floss and use the code FLOSS30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week, well, almost each week, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it yet, projects you might want to download and play with right after this show. I think today's show is somewhere towards the end of that little list there. So joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, Randall. It's good to be here.
And you're still in the flyover bunker, wherever it is?
Yes, yes, here in Oklahoma at the corporate headquarters in the home office.
Well, I am currently speaking to you from Pasadena, California. I'm here for this week for Scale, the Southern California Linux Expo. I've been a speaker here many times, and I'm actually speaking on Sunday about my favorite new subject, Flutter, which is the running Dart on both iOS and Android. We talked to one of the guys from Google a few months back, Adam Barth, I think it was, about that whole thing. And I got so excited by it that I am now teaching classes on it, writing books about it, possibly making a decent living eventually, I hope, on it. Joining me on that stage will be Wim Leeler, who is an old-time Portland friend of mine and just happened to be hired by Google to be the chief Flutter advocate. So I actually have somebody on stage who can answer more questions than I could answer. So it's good to have him there. I'm doing most of the driving, but he will certainly be there to be a color commentary and tell me, whack me on the head every time I'm wrong. So that should be kind of fun. But I'm in a hotel room, which I won't mention the hotel's brand name, but they're pretty well known, and the room is alternating between freezing and being too warm, so I'm having trouble figuring out exactly how I want to run that today. And also, I'm on a really crappy Wi-Fi, so if I drop out a little bit, that's what's going on. In fact, I may have dropped out already and not be aware of it yet. So this week's project is going to be fun. We have Kevin Owicki. I think it's how to pronounce his name. I should have asked him, but Kevin Owicki, I think it should be close. And he's going to be talking to us about Gitcoin. Sorry, I almost said Bitcoin. Gitcoin is a way to monetize GitHub activity so that you can get paid for fixing issues for other people, creating software for other people, and you can also pay people as an incentive, because sometimes open source projects, they don't have enough people participating in them, and there's really urgent issues like security issues and stuff. So Kevin invented this thing called Gitcoin, and what it does is allows you to attach a monetary incentive to issues and then earn that by fixing other people's issues and maybe creating software, things like that. And the exchange will be done in Ethereum, which is one of the many Bitcoin-like things out there. Jonathan, what do you know about this?
I know there is quite an interesting as Bitcoin has gotten more popular, you see more and more companies and people taking the things that they've already done and then trying to say, now powered with blockchain. And yeah, occasionally, the results are hilarious and dumb. But sometimes you get some really interesting ideas out of it. And, you know, hopeful that the idea of bug bounties is one of the interesting ones and not one of the hilarious and dumb ones. Yeah. But we've got the expert to ask about that.
Exactly. We will be bringing him on in just a second. But before that, I have this important message. Because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. The mortgage experience wasn't keeping up with the times. It was dated, and it needed a client-focused technological revolution. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that's just right for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. That's rocketmortgage.com/FLOSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. Let's go ahead and bring in Kevin. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hi, and where are you speaking to us from?
I am calling in from beautiful, sunny Boulder, Colorado.
Cool. Well, it's sunny here too. Well, no, it was sunny. That's cloudy out there, I guess. So I guess it changed a little bit there. So give us the 30,000 foot view. When somebody's reaching for Gitcoin, what problem are they trying to solve and how well did I do that?
Yeah, I think that you came pretty close. And it was curious to me that that we almost accidentally said Bitcoin when we were pitching Gitcoin because most autocorrectors will autocorrect the company name from Gitcoin to Bitcoin still, and I'll know that the project has made it if that stops happening. But Gitcoin is incentivization mechanics for open source software, and what that means is that you can attach a bounty, an Ethereum-based bounty, for any GitHub issue or GitHub pull request, and that'll get paid out when the pull request is merged and the project has been completed. So we do some of the plumbing and mechanics around payouts, but by and large, the project is a community, and it's a way for people who are interested in blockchain to get introduced to some of the best projects in the Ethereum blockchain space.
And how did you get the idea to start this?
I think that I've been a software engineer for 10 or 15 years, and I believe that open source software has powered my career and the careers of almost everyone in my generation of programmers. I've been building things with Python and Postgres and Apache and most recently Nginx in my career as a web developer for as long as I can remember. For the last 10 years, I've been sort of a startup engineering leader in the Boulder startup space. And I think that there's this curious dynamic with open source software where it creates tens of billions of dollars a year in economic value and in multi-billion dollar companies. But there's this huge economic output that comes from open source software, but the expected value of open source software is free in the consumer's eyes, because you can just clone any repo and you can and then there's this in between data point where software engineers can make between $30 an hour and $150 an hour depending on their experience level and their location and the niche that they're in, and so you see that the economic price points for software are just kind of all over the map, and so the idea of Gitcoin came to me because I would really love to see a future in which open source software can be maintained without corporate sponsorship and without the overhead of the Red Hat Foundation or the Linux Foundation. The administrative heft of those companies, I think, works because of the scale. And I would love to use blockchain, which we can get into that whole rabbit hole, hopefully in a few minutes here, mm-hmm. in order to unbundle the business models of corporate sponsorship of open source software.
And why Ethereum and not Bitcoin?
Oh, man. This is where I might start some tribal wars among your audience, because I think that You know, cryptocurrency is there's a lot of tribalism out there with respect to the different cryptocurrencies. And I run the Boulder Blockchain Meetup here in Colorado, and we get everyone from Wall Street types to Burning Man types and everywhere in between. We get Bitcoin maximalists, we get Ethereum maximalists, and even some people who are into Litecoin. I think that I like to spend a lot less time on Twitter arguing about which cryptocurrency is the best, and I like to just focus on building. And Ethereum has 30x the developers that at the next largest cryptocurrency smart contract platform has. And I think with that kind of scale and that kind of maturity in Ethereum, it was just a no-brainer to build the network on Ethereum.
And it also makes sense, I guess, to not use Bitcoin, because now the per transaction cost is up to like $15 or something now, and that probably wouldn't let people have small payouts for things, right?
Yeah, I mean, it ebbs and flows, and I think Bitcoin Cash is doing some work on this to be the Bitcoin currency, whereas Bitcoin is apparently moving into this niche where it's a store of value. It's kind of like digital gold, where you can invest in it, and you can be sure that there's only going to be a limited supply because of the cryptographic proofs and the way the system is designed. And so it sort of occupies that niche. But more recently, I've actually seen that the Bitcoin transaction fees have gone down to only a couple cents, and I'm not sure it completely fits into the narrative of what I just said. These things are alpha software, so they're ebbing and flowing. What I will say is that Bitcoin was a trailblazer in blockchain. It was the first one, but I find myself increasingly enamored with Vitalik Buterin, the founder of Ethereum's vision, and with the amount of pragmatic developer attention and enthusiasm there is in the Ethereum space.
So how do you tie in? First off, let's get this clear. Is this only working with GitHub right now?
Yeah, I think that GitHub has a lot of scale, and that's where open source is right now. So that's what we're focused on. Yeah.
And how do you tie into GitHub to know when an issue has been successfully resolved?
Yeah. So right now, we integrate heavily with the GitHub API in order to post comments and allow people to be updated on the Gitcoin information on GitHub, which is where they already work, which I think is an important consideration, is to build where the developers are already working. And we've got an extensible smart contract architecture that allows developers to either pay out an issue when their tests pass. So that's really useful for bug or code coverage bounties. We offer a UI where if you have a little bit more of a subjective payout considerations, you can just click accept submission and it'll automatically pay out the Ethereum or ERC20 token, which just means Ethereum token out to the submitter. So there's multiple ways that we can integrate with GitHub in order to pay them out. And I think being extensible and being open is eating our own dog food. But so yeah, we've got a lot of options, but almost all of our issues are just using the UI button that pays out when someone completes the software specification.
Hey, I wanted to jump in if I can. So GitHub obviously is where all the cool kids play these days. One of the really big projects that seems like it could take advantage of something like this, the kernel itself, doesn't primarily use GitHub. It's Git. It's Linus Torvalds' mailing list is you know, where a lot of the development happens there. Do you have a game plan to be able to support other platforms? The other one that comes to mind, obviously, is GitLab, which a lot of people really like and use for various reasons. What's the game plan look like?
Yeah. I will note the sort of irony of we've got this distributed version control mechanism in Git, and Ethereum being a distributed decentralized cryptocurrency, and the fact that this is all coming to a head, the intersection of blockchain and Ethereum on GitHub, which is a centralized platform. And so I think that there is, you know, it's not without not without recognition of the irony that I am in front of your audience talking about this project. And I think that the long-term vision of Gitcoin and of the Ethereum space, and I think a lot of folks who subscribe to Linus Torvalds' mailing list, is to move towards a decentralization-centric sort of model. And you can bet dollars to donuts that that's where Gitcoin is going in the long term. But I think that in the short term, there's a lot of UX trade-offs associated with cryptocurrency. And, you know, we haven't even gone down the technical rabbit hole of what blockchain and cryptocurrency is. But I can tell you that when we do, it's going to be a long conversation, because there's just a lot of mechanics there. And we're really, you know, we're in 1996 for blockchain right now. The technology is not very mature. And even for prosumers like open source software, I think that the UI is just starting to get to the place where it's actually usable. And I think that GitHub has done a great job of building a collaboration software, and adding incentivization mechanics on that is really powerful. But I will note that there are other projects that are in the space that are going just the full-blown decentralization route. I'm friends with the OS Coin guys out in, I believe they're in Berlin in Germany, and their mission is to basically to rebuild a decentralized GitHub. I hope I'm getting it right, if the OS Coin guys are listening. And I considered that route, but it just felt like boiling the ocean for me. I mean, GitHub does what it does really well, and I felt like it would be foolish, at least in the near term, not to capitalize on that momentum.
So, talking about blockchain, which I'm not sure we quite yet want to get into all of the nitty gritty on that, but the story of Git itself is so interesting. Would it be fair to say that Git was actually the first application of blockchain to do something useful?
Oh boy, and this is where I'm going to get myself in trouble with people who have Twitter accounts and are going to tell me that, well, Git's not a blockchain. That's completely preposterous. There's no immutability.
Is it?
I think that Git definitely shares some properties with blockchains, namely that it's distributed. But I think that the primary innovation of Satoshi Nakamoto, the person who wrote the Git, the person or persons who wrote the Bitcoin white paper, we don't know who they are. Right. If you're just getting into cryptocurrency, Satoshi Nakamoto is kind of a legend. It's because no one knows who he or she is. But the primary invention there was using cryptographic proofs in order to create immutability, so that you could be sure that your money is not double spent, to solve the Byzantine generals problem, and to create a ledger that people could trust. And I think that Git has been revolutionary for software development, and I think it's a great tool. But I don't think that it wasn't designed to include the same sort of properties of immutability and solving the coordination problem of nodes in the same way that you would have to if you were going to have a store of value on it.
Sure. And there's lots and lots of weeds in that discussion that we're just kind of hovering over and not getting down into. But
I'll drag us down in there. We'll get into it.
we want to keep the show at least somewhat high level so that we don't lose everybody. Okay. But anyway, where I was wanting to go with that is, so has anyone thought about or talked about either integrating into or totally redesigning Git so that you have Git and Gitcoin that are basically now one project? Is that Or a plugin to Git, or, you know, however it needs to work, is that something that's been thought about and talked about?
Yeah, I don't know anything about the application of Git directly in blockchain, but I think that you will certainly see Gitcoin in the terminal sometime in the not too distant future.
So in one way or another, it's coming.
I think that there's a direction in which Gitcoin goes into your terminal, but I don't think that I'm in a place where I could commit to exactly what that looks like yet.
Sure, it's understandable. Which kind of leads into the question, where does the Git code, the Gitcoin code, where does it actually run? Does all of this happen in the cloud, on a user's computer? Is it all running on the GitHub platform? Mm-hmm. Where does the code itself run at?
Yeah, so by the way, I would be remiss if I did not mention that Gitcoin itself is completely open source, and I think that we have to eat our own dog food and make the entire project's code open source. And so all of the code is hosted up on github.com/gitcoinco. There's a couple of repos up there. We have a Chrome extension, which when it's installed in your browser will run locally on your browser and will integrate with GitHub. So basically add Gitcoin functionality on GitHub, the ability to tip users, the ability to pay out straight away on GitHub so that you never have to leave GitHub. So that runs locally on a user's browser. There is a website which is hosted at gitcoin.co that runs in the cloud on a server that we've provisioned on AWS. And then the third repo that I want to talk about is our smart contracts repo. And the smart contracts repo is the Ethereum smart contracts that manage and hold the money that is in transit from a issue submitter to the person who is working on a GitHub issue. So it's basically the escrow smart contract for managing the funds while they're pending, while they're staked on the blockchain. And that runs on the Ethereum blockchain on every single node that runs the Ethereum blockchain. So I guess that's my meandering way of saying that it runs on your local computer, it runs in the cloud, and it runs on the blockchain.
So the answer is yes, it runs everywhere.
Yes, it's all around us.
How does the escrow work in that case? I assume to put out a bug bounty, let's say, and say, well, this issue needs to get fixed, I'm willing to pay $15 sure. worth of ETH for it. How does that yeah. work? How do you prevent the person from then going and spending all of their Ethereum so that they don't have it? Does that money get kind of locked up and just held for the amount yeah. of time? And then on top of that, what do you do if nobody picks up the bounty? Is that money just locked away forever?
Yeah, great question. So basically there are four states to a Gitcoin bounty. There is the posted open state. And as you correctly noted, the Ethereum is staked on the blockchain as a show of faith that the submitters are serious about paying out the issue. So the first state is open, and then the second state is work started, and that's just a way for a contributor to signal to other contributors, hey, dibs-ish, I'm working on this. If you're going to work on this, please also leave me a comment on GitHub and let me know. And then the next state is work submitted, which is I've completed this, I represent that I've fulfilled the scope of the issue. And then the fourth state is paid out, which closes out the issue and releases the ETH or Ethereum token back to the person who did the code bounty. And so that's the happy path of the system. And the failure path is that no one picks it up. We've seen so far that about 80% of issues that are submitted to Gitcoin are turned around by the community, which I think is pretty extraordinary for alpha software. But in the 20% case in which it's not picked up or it's not done to scope, then the issue submitter, the person who staked the funds, can kill the bounty and then recoup their funds from the blockchain.
Interesting. I figured you would have to have that kind of failure path figured out for it to work. Rather than getting all of that money stuck in a way, you know, on yeah. projects that are dead and bounties that are dead. Yeah. What does it take for someone to get started using this? As a developer, if I want to use this in my project, do I have to set up an Ethereum wallet, and then the users have to go and source Ethereum before they can put out bounties?
Yeah, great question. So there's a browser plugin called MetaMask, which has over a million users now. And you can just install it straight away in Chrome, and it's an in-browser Ethereum wallet. And we support MetaMask and several other Ethereum wallets straight away in browser. It just happens that MetaMask is the most prominent one. And yeah, so in order to submit an issue to Gitcoin, you would need MetaMask and you need some Ethereum in order to stake on the issue. Now, in order to work on the issue, you just need MetaMask in order to claim the issue.
Does Gitcoin have built into it the ability to buy Ethereum or convert it back to cash?
Gitcoin does not have the ability to buy Ethereum or convert it into cash. From the very start, we're focused on meeting product market fit for our desired use case, and there's a ton of regulations around transferring one cryptocurrency into another, or transferring cryptocurrency into fiat into dollars. And we felt like having to pay several tens of thousands of dollars per US state in order to become a licensed money transmitter was probably out of scope for a four-person team. But you can bet that in the future, it will get easier to use Gitcoin if you are not a current Ethereum user.
And then once a developer finishes the patch, submits it, and it gets accepted, what's the turnaround time for the Ethereum getting transferred? Does that happen pretty much instantaneously, or does it take several minutes to work through the system? What does that look like?
Yeah, and I'll try to give the 100,000 foot view, because the answer, as with many things technical, is it depends on in this case, it depends on the transaction fees that you're willing to pay. But in the case in which you're included in the next block, Ethereum has a 14-second block time, and so that's a worldwide payment in less than a minute, which I think is pretty cool.
Hey, I'll let Jonathan keep asking some more questions, but I have an important message before we continue on, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career with IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV offers over 3,300 hours of binge-worthy, on-demand training with more than 125 hours added weekly. Stream IT Pro TV's course live and on-demand worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, PC, or by using their iOS or Android apps. There's no need to go off-site for training. Seasoned IT pros understand the importance of continued education for career development. IT Pro TV does IT live every day, so you know you're getting the most current IT training. Courses include Certified Ethical Hacker, Kali Linux, AWS, ITIL, and ISC Squared Security. If you're interested in IT Pro TV's team solution, contact them for group pricing. You can track your team's results and prove the ROI of your training spend with IT Pro TV's supervisor portal. You'll gain full control over your team's training schedule, so you can create custom groups and training assignments. See individual and group analytics, logins, viewing time, and video downloads. Whether you're eager to start your new career in IT, or you're a seasoned pro, or you're looking for an engaging way to keep your team up to date, IT Pro TV offers effective and entertaining IT training. Visit itpro.tv/floss to learn more about IT Pro TV's team solution and to request a free team trial. Or sign up for an individual monthly membership with a free 7-day trial at itpro.tv/floss. Use code FLOSS30 to receive 30% off your subscription for the lifetime of your active subscription. Premium subscriptions, which include unlimited transcender practice exams and virtual labs, are normally $857 a year. But you only pay $600 when you go to itpro.tv/floss and use the code FLOSS30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, ROI proven. Join the more than 90,000 IT Pro TV members today. And we thank IT Pro TV for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. So I got a couple of questions here. I want to know who's involved with this. Is it just you? And how are you planning on getting paid? Is just part of the Ethereum transactions actually give you a little bit of a VIG for every sale?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I wish I could give as concise of an answer as you are charismatic when you're talking about your sponsors. I have this subliminal. I'm still thinking about IT Pro TV. I'm like, man, we should partner with them.
Oh, that's good.
and for some reason, I want to get a Rocket mortgage. I don't know why. But anyway, to answer your question, Gitcoin started as a side project last summer, and I quickly realized that it had legs, and that the time was right, and that if I wanted to enter the blockchain space, the timing was right. So I was looking for, and I also recognized that the idea of combining blockchain and open source is kind of obvious, That was reinforced by, I went to this hackathon called ETH Waterloo, which was at the time the largest Ethereum hackathon to date. And there's two different groups of college kids that were working on bounties for open source software. And I was like, holy smokes, I'm going to have competition if I do this. So I was just thinking, you know, if I want to go full time, I need to take the leap. And I had a friend who had just been hired to work at ConsenSys, which is founded by Joe Lubin, who is a co-founder of Ethereum and is one of the sponsors of a lot of work in the space. They're early in Ethereum, early in Bitcoin, and they're basically a blockchain venture studio that sponsors work that's doing good things for the space. And so quickly set my sights on working with them. I actually applied for a job there. I applied to their academy program. I think I had a call with their security audit guys, and I was just blown off at every single turn, which was a pretty humbling experience. But I managed to find a way to get in front of Joe Lubin, the founder and CEO of ConsenSys, and get invited from Colorado out to New York, where they're based, to pitch Joe and his disciples on Gitcoin, and they're into it. The great thing about Gitcoin for ConsenSys is that all of the projects that they sponsor are open source software, and they're looking for ways to train people up on the space, to bring engineers into blockchain, and also to accelerate their projects. And it just so happens that Gitcoin is exactly that. So I engineered this product launch in which I made sure that I was on the front of Product Hunt and the front of our Ethereum and a few other news outlets, and I engineered this launch and pitched it to Joe, and they offered to create a joint venture that was sponsored by ConsenSys and bring me on full time to work on it, and that was only last fall. So since then, the project is a joint venture of ConsenSys and myself. And we sponsor some of the best repositories in the space, Truffle, MetaMask, ConsenSys Diligence, some projects from the Ethereum Foundation itself are using Gitcoin. So that was the differentiator that I needed in order to differentiate from everyone and their college roommate who was starting an open source bounty project. And then, I'm sorry, there was a second half to your question, but I completely forgot what it was.
How do you get paid? Are you taking a bit of VIG off of each transaction?
Oh, yeah. So the answer right now is that we're not focused on making money. We're focused on growing open source. And I will also mention that there is another differentiator between Gitcoin and other projects that are working in the space. There's this phenomenon in the space called ICOs. It stands for initial coin offering. And it basically means that you do a crowd sale of a token as a means of funding your project. And the space has gone completely insane over the last year in a very profitable way. There have been projects that have raised over $20 million that don't even have any code yet and don't even have developers. Wow. And I felt like software developers are going to want to focus on a project that's focused on the mission first and is not focused on the speculation and the trading. And so have made a strategic decision to be very long-term focused on what our vision of the future of blockchain and the future of open source is. And we're just focused on providing value to prosumers in the blockchain space, and we'll figure out the monetization stuff down the line. But I think that while blockchain is growing and while there's while people are finding full-time work, using Gitcoin and using Gitcoin bounties, that I think is really immense value. And my hope is that eventually we'll be able to find a way to monetize in some small way from the value that we're creating in the world.
Well, clearly you have expenses. I mean, Gitcoin.co is not a free machine. So how are you paying for that?
Consensus is sponsoring us until we reach profitability. They have a very long-term view. Like I said, the time horizon for Gitcoin to reach the mainstream and I think achieve some sort of profitability is several years out. And it was important for me to find a sponsor that had a long-term view. I actually went down to Sand Hill Road in Silicon Valley and pitched some VCs Gitcoin, which I'd never done before. I've always been like a lead technologist and haven't been like the charismatic CEO in the pitch chair or anything like that. So that was an experience in itself. And I just remember I got to a point where I almost got a term sheet from one of the VCs, and I remember the timing wasn't matching up with whether or not we could do it with consensus or with them or not. And I remember the associate calling me and she was like, this is what you do in this scenario. You have to tell them that you had a death in the family and you need to move the call to because of that. And I just remember thinking in the back of my head, oh my God, you're a complete sociopath. I'm not doing that. and Joe would never do me like that. And so I don't know. Consensus is just the perfect partner because they're value centric. They want to focus on what's good for blockchain, and they have a long time horizon. So I believe in them, and they believe in me. And we're gonna and they're fronting the expenses for Gitcoin for the foreseeable future until we figure out profitability in a few years down.
So this is a combination of both an episode of Silicon Valley and maybe that South Park episode where it's step one, make a Gitcoin, step two, question mark, step three, profit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a little bit of that. And one of the things that I'm waiting for in the space is I just think that the space is full of people who are focused on trading and speculation, and by the space I mean blockchain, and I think that we're going to have to see a lot of that subside over the next year or two in order to realize the vision of the future of work and open source integrating with blockchain. And I'm sort of waiting for kind of the hype to subside there. And I'm also sort of waiting for Gitcoin to grow a little bit more and get a little bit more scale. And so I think that it's a little bit better defined than just question mark profit. But I think that it is sort of a little bit of that right now. But it's by design.
So whenever we talk about Ethereum, my mind always goes back to a year or two ago. There was a high-profile attack with, it's been a while, Vidal, I think is who it was.
Yes.
Yeah. And the abuse of smart contracts. What sorts of protections do you guys have in place, and I guess even Ethereum as a whole, to prevent someone writing a bug bounty that, you know, sneakily drains $1 million out of everyone's Ethereum account and gives it to them?
Yeah. Great question. And just to very briefly touch on the DAO hack, there was this decentralized autonomous investment fund called the DAO that raised, I think, $200 million at the time. And it was hacked. That money was leaked out of the smart contract. And it basically divided the Ethereum community into the two camps. There was the camp that said code is law. That person should be able to keep the money. And then there is the camp that said, no, we should not let that person keep that money. Stealing is wrong. And we need to set the right precedent for the future. And so it divided Ethereum into Ethereum Classic, which is the code is law people, and then the pragmatists, which is the mainstream Ethereum community. I happen to fall in the latter. I think that the latter camp, I think that pragmatism is very important in alpha stage software. So the politics of that aside, I don't think we need to drudge ourselves through 2016 and those debates again. The second part of your question is, how does Gitcoin or just the space in general deal with that kind of threat when there's so much money sloshing around. Yes. And I think the following disclaimer still applies. This is alpha software, and don't invest more than you can plan to lose until we're able to take the alpha label off of all this software. And then the second answer to your question is we're getting better at it. So ConsenSys has a diligence team, and they've got a ton of best practices around how to prevent your smart contracts from getting pwned, for lack of a better word. And one of the ways that Gitcoin does that is by separating the funds into separate areas, think like separate smart contracts, so that if one area of the contract does get pwned, then only a subset of the funds are at risk. And then there's specific best practices for each smart contract there, where you can make sure that you can basically prove their correctness, that they can't be hacked. So I think that there's an evolving set of best practices that is going to get the space there eventually. But in the meantime, please do not invest more than you can afford to lose in Ethereum or in Bitcoin or in anything else in the space. I will say that Gitcoin is in a kind of a special spot with respect to people abusing the system, because everything on Gitcoin is associated with one's GitHub profile, and that's your resume if you're a software developer. Don't be a jerk to people in your community. Don't be a jerk in something that's connected to your reputation. And I think that puts us in the vanguard of people using the system as it was intended, and not in a jerky way.
So you've convinced me to at least, dip my toes into these waters and try it out. So for the software repositories on GitHub that I, am associated with, have some control over, what needs to happen? How does a project flip the switch and say, hey, we are a Gitcoin powered project now? What all is involved with making that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Gitcoin augments your development flow right now. It's not a way of replacing your development team. So I would caution that please don't plan to run a marathon before you've walked or crawled yet. But I mean, there are projects that have been done completely with Gitcoin, but those are people who have sort of understand the system, understand the crowdsourcing model, and have experience with Ethereum. So the starting point is just to go to gitcoin.co/new and to paste in an issue URL that you want someone from the crowd to work on. Press the submit button. Within 15 seconds, it'll be on the blockchain. We'll promote it out to our network of contributors, and you can try before you buy with Gitcoin, and also with whoever we match you up with. Now, down the road, if you like the system and you continue to use it, you could run your entire project just by writing specifications, attaching Ethereum to it, and putting it out to the crowd.
Now, I was looking at your existing projects page, and first I typed Perl, and there wasn't anyone like that. And I typed Dart, and there wasn't anything like that. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not going to get paid for anything I want to do anytime soon. How many projects? How many issues are you currently funding?
I will say that right now we're super hyper focused on the intersection of Ethereum and open source software. So you'll see a lot of Python and JavaScript stuff on there, and that's just an artifact of us being early in the space. We just crossed 250 funded issues worth about $50,000 US, and I think that should be about 55 Ethereum, and that's just in the last 6 months. So You can see those statistics if you go to gitcoin.co/explorer. We've got a way of navigating the work in the space through that website. And for any of your listeners who want to check out the funded work available on the platform, that's where you want to go, gitcoin.co/explorer.
Now, what's the source of truth for that? Is that something that's actually in the blockchain and you derive it from there?
Great question. Yes, so the source of truth for all of this stuff is the blockchain. We are a blockchain-centric platform, but we do have a cloud instance which mirrors the blockchain to a Postgres database and then serves that up through an API. So you can basically query either the blockchain or you can query Gitcoin's API in order to get the information.
Okay, and how far along is the project? Is it usable today?
Oh man, how do you define usability? Dude, I mean, I'm on a podcast, so I should just say yes, right? I mean, so the answer is that, like, if you care, like, if you want to learn about Ethereum and blockchain, then the Gitcoin community is a fantastic place to do it. But if you could, for lack of a better phrase, not give a you don't give a shit about Ethereum or any of this kind of space, then we're not really ready for mainstream adoption, even in the open source community yet. Super hyper focused on the intersection of open source and Ethereum and helping developers find work in open source software, blockchain centric stuff. But so I guess the answer is, if you're in the intersection of that Venn diagram of open source and blockchain, then please come check us out. And if you're not, then maybe just sign up for the mailing list at gitcoin.co and then come back in about 6 months' time, in which the software has all become a little bit more usable.
Yeah, I was going to ask what the timeline of that is. Do you have a roadmap, and who decides what's on the roadmap?
Yeah, we've got a roadmap, and that's it's in broad strokes available on the web page. Under, if you scroll down to the roadmap section on the landing page, we've got very broad strokes roadmap there. And then we've also got it being an open source project, everything that we're planning on doing listed on GitHub issues. So that's the way, if you want to get a little bit more granular with the roadmap, you can go to our GitHub repo and check out the issues board. Oh, and the second question was, who decides what's on that roadmap? It's a team decision. So in the spirit of decentralization and flat organizations, we work together and achieve consensus on what's on the roadmap. And super excited to run a flat organization and see how long we can scale that.
Yeah, I obviously you'd have to be speculating about the future here, but do you plan on being the BDFL for this for forever future, or do you have a plan to get out?
BDFL. Benevolent Dictator for Life. I know what that means. Okay. I'm Googling in real time. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, I think that the spirit of blockchain and the spirit of decentralization is moving towards an organization that's totally distributed. And I think that I think that having a benevolent dictator is a stopgap until we get there. So I would love to phase out at some point. And it's not for a lack of love for the project. Working on open source and building communities is the highest use of my time that I can think of. It's that I think that the project will be healthier if it's a distributed group of individuals that is healthy and is able to reach consensus without a centralized party, a centralized benevolent dictator in the long term.
Cool. That sounds like a real good answer there. Now, we're almost out of time. Keeping that in mind, is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go?
Anything that we didn't cover that I want to make sure that audiences are aware of? Yes. I think that when you first read about blockchain and you first read about cryptocurrencies, you're going to be drawn in by the headlines about the crazy speculation and the people who are getting crypto rich or the people who are losing all their money on scams and cryptocurrency. And I would encourage all of your listeners to ignore all that and to learn how to build it using the tools in the space, because the people that are building tools in the space are the ones that are building the future. And the speculation stuff is all just noise. Please put it aside and focus on the tools and focus on your community, because that's where the value is.
Cool. And two final questions that my audience yells at me if I don't actually ask, which is, one, what's your favorite scripting language?
What's my favorite scripting language? I'm a Python guy. I love Python.
Okay. Yeah. Well, a lot of people are. Okay. And what text editor do you use?
Oh, man. I feel like I would get way more nerd cred if I said Vim right now. But the truth is that I use Sublime Text, and I'm more than happy with it. Every once in a while, I get really motivated to move everything over to Vim and to learn all the key bindings, and I always end up always end up failing. But yeah, it's Sublime Text all the way for now.
Yeah, well, the last time I used VI in any length of time is when it was just called VI. So that tells you how long ago I made the jump from VI to Emacs. So that's been my little jump. However, lately I've been working a lot with VS Code because VS Code has beautiful IDE for the modern projects I'm doing in Dart and Flutter. So
I've heard really good things about VS Code. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but third or fourth person who's told me to check that out. So I'll have to do that. Although I'll have to say that my career is kind of moving more into doing stuff like this and talking to people like you. And I don't think I'm going to become a professional podcast host like you are anytime soon. But it's a reason that you and I have not updated our Vim settings in a while is that we're doing stuff like this instead of spending as much time in our editors.
Yep. Yeah, I've got the scars to show for the many years that I've been doing this podcast too. So I'm definitely definitely got that. Okay, well, actually, so we're out of time. So thank you very much for coming on and talking to us about Gitcoin. And I hope you'll have a much bigger audience once the word gets out. So that'll be great.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. That was Kevin Owicki, who is the founder of Gitcoin, talking to us about his project. What do you think there, Jonathan?
I think this is solidly in the realm of projects where it actually makes sense to blockchainify them, and especially the way they've done it. It's really a neat idea to decentralize doing code bounties and bug bounties and things like that. Especially if it attracts kind of the critical mass where enough people are aware of it and start using it. It definitely seems to have legs. I expect to hear more about it in the future.
Cool. Right. And I don't really have anything to add to that. I think it's amazing now that, you know, with a few clicks of a cursor, I could, you know, maybe earn some Ethereum, you know, if it happens to be that small intersection right now. I'll wait till I see Pearl projects on there, though. That's probably the next time I'm going to touch this. So I'll be checking back every couple of months, coming back around to see if Pearl and Dart are there, because it'll be really cool. Anything else before I wrap up the show?
So the only other thought that came to mind is one of the questions people always have is, well, what is the inherent value of one of these cryptocurrencies? And I would say communities and projects like this one is what gives cryptocurrencies their inherent value, because otherwise it's just math. But when you have people that are actively using it, then suddenly it's worth something.
Cool. All right. Well, here's who's coming up next. Back next week, we've got SUSE. We've got Alan Clark coming on to talk about that. I know very little about SUSE. Hopefully, I'll get a Linux expert on the show. That'll help me out because I don't know Linux very well. I know Linus personally, but I don't know Linux very well. Following that, Etsy Viper Builder, which lists itself as scaffolding for building apps in a clean way with the Viper architecture for iOS development. So it's an open source project about building stuff for the iOS App Store. So that's going to be fun to talk to them. And I'm learning a lot about actually iOS and Android development now because I'm playing with Flutter, and Flutter is really great for that. And it's actually going to get me to be a mobile developer finally, so that'll be fun. All right, Rust, following that, that's the Mozilla language, a systems programming language that runs blazingly fast, prevents seg faults, and guarantees thread safety. That sounds like an ad. Hey, that's pretty cool. Sorry. OWASP Dependency Tracker, which is a software composition analysis platform that keeps track of all of the third-party components used in all the applications an organization creates or consumes. Well, following that, we've got Pigeon, which is LivePurple, which is game. It's basically the universal attach this application to all the various protocols out there, like IRC and the old AIM, which is how it got its name, which AIM's gone now. But all those other protocols out there, Yahoo Protocol, Google Chat, things like that. Pretty darn cool. And then just added to the schedule between last week and this week, we've got the Univention Corporate Server, which is a server and IT management software to regain flexibility and control. This is an interesting thing. I haven't had much time to research it, but they wrote me, like everybody else can, to get on the show. And I will say this now. You go to the homepage on this show, twit.tv/floss. Right down there in the lower third if you're watching the video. And you can see who we've got coming up. You can also see who I'm working on. But if somebody you want on the show is not on that list, have them contact me, Merlin@Stonehenge.com. My address is right there, so you don't have to write it down. We take a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. I actually don't think we had any questions this week. Maybe we did. We had one. We just didn't ask it. So the question was, of course, I'll ask it now that he's gone. Somebody wanted to know where he got his hat. So that was kind of cool. If you haven't seen the video, go download the video and you'll see what we're talking about. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus or at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus and at Merlin on Twitter. That's M-E-R-L-Y-N. Home office asked me to read a couple of messages here. Did you know that the TWIT flash briefing is now available in Canada, Australia, United Kingdom, and India? It's been in the U.S. for a while, so now is the perfect time to go into your Alexa app settings and under the flash briefing, look for TWIT. Also, it's time for our yearly TWIT survey, and we want to hear from you so we can serve you better. Head over to twit.tv/survey and be heard. As I said just moments ago, I will also be at the Southern California Linux Expo just like about a quarter block that way. That's why I have this this particular, I almost mentioned the name, the one with the room that stays both warm and cold at the same time. I'll be here this week. I'll be looking for guests for Floss Weekly. I also have a BOF I'm doing on Friday about Flutter and Dart. And I'm speaking on Sunday, which is almost the next to last thing on the day, so I can't get out of here early, on Flutter, actually, talking about how to use Flutter to create your iOS and Android apps from one code base. It's really, really exciting stuff. Anything you want to plug, Jonathan, before I go?
I'll just mention that you can follow me for my occasional musings at JP_Bennett on Twitter. And yeah, other than that, I will I mentioned to Randall before the show, I will try to stay out of jail this week as I came across one of those security problems and I'm trying to report it. And as Randall knows, that occasionally does not end well, but we'll see. Hopefully I'll be around for next week's show and the show after that, as people have come to expect.
Oh, and speaking of being around, I should have mentioned this at the opening of the show, but I really want to thank Aaron and Dan for stepping up to cover me in my absence. I woke up that morning a week ago with a really, really bad sore throat. It was so sore and scratchy, I knew I couldn't do the show. So, because I barely was able to talk a couple sentences before I just gave out. So thank you for covering that, Aaron and Dan. And I hope not to get sick anymore, because that gets in the way of my schedule. So there we go. But thank you once again, Jonathan, for being my co-host. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.